Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here today with our co-host, Coach Nick. Coach Nick, welcome to the Challenge Weekly Show.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here, Coach Steve.
How are you doing today?
I'm very, very well. How about yourself?
I'm well. This is our Challenge Weekly Show, episode number 26, Nick. 26.
26, yeah.
26.
Is that your age? Are you 26?
No. So I'm going to keep my age a secret. No, I'm 28. So I'm 28.
You're probably 26.
We've got a couple of weeks of Challenge Weekly Show before we hit my age in weekly shows. But look, so if you enjoy this episode or any of our Challenge Weekly Show episodes, make sure you go check out some of our other quarter of a century episodes, right? Our 25 other episodes where we touch on a whole bunch of different and funky topics. But look, today we're going to be touching on lots of different things. But it's an exciting time in the challenge. It's always an exciting time in the challenge, Nick.
Absolutely. This is a very key, exciting time though. Very
it is. Key. Yeah. So we're in the start of week 9 in the challenge. So we are in that final phase of the challenge. So that week's 9 to 12. And for all of our challenges, we're transitioning into that week's 9 to 12 training plan, the week's 9 to 12 nutrition plan. And it was an exciting time over the weekend because many of us did our week 8 check-in photos.
Yes, I've been seeing them all. They're fantastic.
Yeah. And I think the thing I love about the challenge is that there are so many like quiet achievers, people who might not be posting many questions on the forum or on their journals or on Facebook or Instagram or anywhere. And they're just plodding along, working hard. They might be listening to this podcast and they're absorbing everything and just putting in the work. And they come out at times like this, like last weekend where people were posting photos on the journals, on their Facebook group, heck, even on Instagram about their progress from not only weeks 4 to 8, but weeks 1, week 4, week 8, that whole journey. And that's when we start to see these changes, and change can happen quickly. Like within 8 weeks, you can see quite a lot of change. And
oh yeah.
It's still exciting to see what some of us can achieve over that next 4-week period. So work hard, everyone, work hard, because lots of things can happen over the next 4 weeks, and we can get ourselves into amazing shape and some of the best shapes that we can get into in all of our life.
You're all doing brilliantly. We're watching.
We are.
Cheering on.
Here we are. Cheering everybody along. I do send out my best wishes to everyone who is in New South Wales and in the ACT who are currently experiencing lockdown still. I hope everyone's staying safe and, training hard at home. Being in Melbourne, Nick, you and I, we know what it's like to be in lockdown, and it does become mentally fatiguing, does become physically fatiguing, and we do get into that zone of, I can't be bothered anymore. And I understand that. And we've spoken about lockdowns in other podcasts. I'm going to invite you to check that one out. But remember that, you can control only so much, but there are some things that you can control, such as what time you wake up in the morning. If you go for a walk around the block, are you going to do some push-ups today? These are some small steps that you can take to keep yourself on track to be healthy, because we can control our health even if we are in lockdown.
Definitely. And I just thought of another cool tip that I haven't given yet. For some reason, it just flashed back to me. Another thing is to make sure that you get dressed in your nice active wear every day to do your workout, because it just makes a difference. It's as though you're going to the gym, and it just gives you that mindset, fresh hair, fresh active wear, even if it's just you and your rabbit in the gym. But it's just a really nice way to get that mindset going. So that's another little tip. Just set your clothes out the night before and wear them. Take lots of photos and pretend that you are a superstar.
Yeah, I like that. And that's similar with if you're working from home as well. So if you are working from home, a great routine to get into is to get dressed for work. So instead of working in your pajamas, like some of us do, it might be better to, get dressed like you were going to work, so that you kind of have that phase shift in your day, being like, okay, I've now woken up, I've done my morning routine, now I'm in work mode. And then when you finish work, you might transition into your active wear to go work out, and you transition back into your home clothes, right? So that kind of change in your clothes can be really powerful mentally.
So true. Just getting out of those jammies into something else. It's just one thing that you can do, and it's a pretty straightforward thing. So if you only do that, that is a win.
Yes. Now, Nick, let's talk deadlifts. How's your deadlift training going?
I'm loving my deadlift training. So I always have something to report on a Monday because Mondays are my deadlift days pretty much. So I'm on track to do quite well. Like I'm 100 kilos behind you. Actually, it depends if you did the, I can't remember if you did 220 or 230.
Yeah. So last week I ended up pulling the 230.
Okay. Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
Well done. Yeah. So I'm 130, but I'm 130 for six and it was quite comfy. So we cool, you know, like we're all right.
I love that. I'm only 100 kilos behind you, but also six reps. Yeah. Okay.
But I was thinking, yeah, because I saw that. And what I love about our little comp is that I think it's just really nice for people like us that can sometimes you can get into the grind of it all. And then it sort of spurs you on to just train that little bit harder and push yourself. And I like that for us.
Going out to everybody here, we are having our little bit of a deadlift weekend, our deadlift celebration, where I'm going to invite everybody who's listening to this, everyone who's in the challenge, everyone who's not in the challenge, to join us in our deadlift celebration, the first ever challenge liftoff, where we're going to invite you to post a video of yourself completing a one rep max on a deadlift safely, as safe as you feel comfortable.
Yes, very safely.
And it's just going to be a celebration. So if your one rep max is 200 kilos like me, or if it's 130 for six, that's not really one rep max, but that's okay. Or if it's 60 kilos, or heck, even if it's just the bar, we want to celebrate everyone's strength, because it's a celebration of strength and it's a celebration of the human body, right? Like many of us can't even deadlift. And if you can deadlift, that's awesome. And we're celebrating that movement. Okay. So we'd like to invite everybody to upload a video of themselves either on Instagram or Facebook, and tag, if you're on Instagram, tag the challenge so that we can see it. So either Max Challenge or Maxine's Challenge, or on our Facebook support group, because we're on there quite frequently, and post that video on the weekend of July the 30th to the 1st of August. So anytime in that weekend. And if you use the hashtag, hashtag challenge liftoff, so that we know that you're being part of this. And what we'll do is we'll compile all the names of those who enter the competition, our little celebration, and we'll just pick a winner out of the hat. So we'll pick one male, one female, and we'll send that winner out a really awesome prize. Okay. So it's just a fun celebration. And, you know, it ends up being around that, what is it, week 11 or so of the challenge. So it's still a week away from that final check-in process. So for many of us, we're kind of peaking in our strength. We're feeling strong. We're feeling capable. And it's a great time to kind of test it and go, well, how much could I lift? Let that be 100 kilos, 200, or even 300 beyond. Because the deadlift is always a fun one to explore your strength.
Absolutely. And you can, we're not going to be too strict on it all. So you can use straps, belts, anything that you need to use to do it. And it can be any style. It could be a sumo. It doesn't matter. Just lift that bar.
Lift that bar. Show us what you're capable of.
Yes.
Now, Nick, talking about news, we did announce some exciting news last week as well.
I know. How exciting. How exciting. I wonder if everybody knows yet, though.
The news is that the next challenge, which will begin in August, the next challenge that begins in August, will be the very first ever six-week challenge.
Woo!
Six-week challenge. Yes. So we are shifting the formats slightly to a six-week version. So it's a slightly different format, but same results. You know, it's going to be the exact same process. So the way it will work is you'll be given a six-week training plan, a six-week nutrition plan, and everything else will be the same. We've got our forums. We've got everything set in place. The check-ins might be slightly different, where we might be doing 2-week check-ins so that we're staying on track. But the reason why we kind of want to make this shift is that we find that many of us, you know, signing up for a 12-week journey, a 12-week challenge, can be a really big challenge. You know, in 12 weeks, life can change a lot. Heck, we could be in and out of lockdown. We could, you know, have life events happen. You know, we've got kids, we've got work, we've got pets, we've got everything in between, where 12-week commitment can be quite a lot. And we do find statistically that many of our challenges slowly drop off around this like 5 to 7 to 8 week mark. So by running a 6-week challenge, for many of us, that's a good commitment. We go, oh, well, 6 weeks. Hey, we can do that. It's like 42 days. All right. I'm going to stick to this. And that way we can get lots more people getting that 6-week work in, getting this good transformation. And then we can just repeat this 6-week continuously, where we go, hey, I can do 6 weeks at a time, right? And then hopefully that transitions lots of us into the fitness lifestyle.
Absolutely. It's enough to form great habits and really get on track. And definitely you can go super hard as well. It's not, you know, it's not unheard of to go into, you know, a good calorie deficit and really just, you don't, you know, it doesn't really do anything other than just get you good results. 6 weeks, you know, not too long, in and out.
In and out. And when you speak to previous challengers, many of them will echo the same narrative where they go, hey, I wasn't sure until about week 6, 7, 8, and then the magic happened in that last tail end of the challenge. So basically what we're doing is taking that tail end of the challenge and making it the challenge. So we are putting in that magic of the last 6 weeks into the challenge. So we're going hard for that 6 weeks. By that 6 week period isn't, you know, too long, where we risk a lot of things like excessive muscle loss or diet fatigue or metabolic adaptation or anything like that. So it's a great time where we can go and go hard, have a little bit of a rest, maybe 1 or 2 weeks, and then go and go hard again for the next 6 weeks.
So sweet spot, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you were wanting to do something more of a 12 week, the way it's going to work is we're going to do 6 weeks, then it's going to be about 2 weeks off. So we go through the same judging process, the same awards, everything in between. And then we do another 6 weeks. So the idea is that we want to do 6 weeks, a slight little rest for 1 or 2 weeks, and then 6 weeks again. So we're actually making the time in between challenges smaller, which was a really big feedback that we got from challengers, where they go, well, it's, you know, 5 weeks until the next challenge, or even more to the next challenge. What am I meant to do? And it's like, great. Well, now we've made it so that we can do 6 weeks, a couple of weeks of a break, 6 weeks again, go hard, go hard, go hard. It's gonna be awesome.
You're not getting rid of us anytime soon, anyone. We're with you all the way, all the time now. More of us.
Talking about our programs, I do think many of us have a lot of uncertainties about certain programs. For example, things like muscle building programs. Many of us have gone through dieting where we were, you know, 150 kilos, now we're 80 kilos, and we're like, oh, well, I've been dieting forever. I don't know how to transition into a muscle building program. Muscle building programs often have things like a calorie surplus. So if anything, you might put on weight while we're going through a muscle building phase, which is mentally challenging. I understand that. I appreciate that. Yeah. It's very hard. It's very hard. And sometimes 12 weeks committing to 12 weeks of a muscle building program can be quite a lot. So this 6 week little like bites, what we can do is kind of transition between like a muscle gaining phase or maybe a strength phase or a different type of niche. And then we might transition back into a weight loss phase. And then we might transition into maybe a fitness phase and then back to like a muscle building, then back to a weight loss. So there's a lot more pathways that we can take with our fitness career rather than just, okay, 12 weeks, I'm going to commit to weight loss and then wipe my hands and walk away. Okay, now we've got a bit of a path where we go, hey, you might do 6 weeks of muscle building and then 6 weeks of weight loss and maybe 6 weeks of muscle building. Maybe you love that muscle building, so you do another 6 weeks after that and then you go back to weight loss. No issues there. Great way to map out our career, I guess.
Exactly. Just you can take any path that you like, and there's that 6 week commitment to each one. So I can't wait for this. I'm excited.
It's going to be good. Now, questions that have come up over the past week was about cost or the price or the investment into this 6 week challenge. And basically it's going to be cut in half, straight down the middle. So if it's your first time doing the challenge, it's going to be $75 for 6 weeks, where regularly it was $150 or $149 or something like that for the 12 weeks. So cut straight in half. And then for a return challenger, it's going to be $50. So they get the $25 return challenger discount, where in the past it used to be, you know, $99 for a return challenger. So now it's $50. Again, straight down the middle, cut in half. So what that means is if you were new to the challenge, what you could do is do 6 week challenge paying the regular price and then another 6 week challenge doing the return challenger price. So it actually ends up being cheaper if you are new to the challenge, by doing the six weeks rather than 1 12-week. So that's pretty cool there. And then we'll also have other promotions. Yeah. So we'll have other small promotions such as like the early bird offer. So you could even get the challenge for as low as $40 for 6 weeks, which is pretty cool for 6 weeks of programming, 6 weeks of coaching from Nick and I and our challenge team of ambassadors and everyone in between. You have access to the forums and all the other bits and pieces that we offer in the challenge. So I think a pretty good little investment for, you know, completely structured programming.
I think it's too good to pass up. I like it.
And The other question we get quite a bit was about prizes. How are the prizes going to work? Well, yes, we still have our challenge prizes. We're going to have our top 10, our top 50, and everything in between. So the first prize for both Max and Maxine will be $2,000 in cash. So $2,000 in cash, you can spend it any way you like. So that's going to be going out to a Max and Maxine winner for our 6-week challenge. Second place is going to be $500 cash. Third place, $250. If you get into our top 10, that'll be about $400 worth of product. So if you did end up winning, you get your $2,000 in cash plus about $400 in product, which is awesome, really cool. And then also if you're in the top 50, you get a top 50 t-shirt as well. So lots of prizes to be won. But heck, even just like that $40 commitment for a return challenger, you get an awesome supplement discounts. So if you are a regular gym goer and you buy lots of products, you might as well sign up to the challenge and get that discount. You probably make your money back quite quickly just by buying product on maxes.com. Yeah. So look, it's awesome. It's an awesome time of the challenge. It's gonna be a great change. And heck, look, this is gonna be a little bit of uncharted territory for us. And if it's really successful, we're gonna continue to complete 6-week challenges. If it's not successful, that's okay. We'll put our hand up and say it didn't work out as planned, and we'll just revert back to our 12-week model. So testing the waters, trying something new and exciting, and it's for the better. It's for the better for everybody, so that we can get some really great results and people are, you know, delving themselves into that fitness lifestyle. Yeah,
absolutely. And for anyone that you know that has been hesitant to join up, if they're like, oh, no way could I do 12 weeks, I can't be like you, well, now you can go to them and say it's only 6. Of course you can. So get your friends involved.
It's gonna be awesome. Look, Nick, let's move on to some non-scale victories for the week, our NSVs. Did you find some NSVs this week?
I did. I found some great NSVs. So shout out to Sal Lawrence, who is our grand champion from the last round. He is on fire for our deadlift comp. I'm sure it's only for our deadlift comp that he's doing this. But, yeah, so he did 10 reps of 140 kilos, and he said that he was pretty much feeling it at rep number 5, which, yeah, that's right. That's pretty much where you're going to feel it. So well done. And I know that he listens to this. I know that he listens to it, I think, every Wednesday. So, Sal, shout out. Yo, well done, though.
Congratulations, Sal.
We love watching him also at the moment because he's going through, you know, his body recomp phase, gaining some muscle, showing us all how it's done. We love that. So brilliant. Next one, Nicola. Now, Nicola, you've been fantastic. You know, you've been amazing. You've been really taking on board a lot of different things that we've been saying, and I've seen your mindset change over time. That is not why you've got an NSV today, though. It is. She says she's just finished the last workout in weeks 5 to 8, and it feels like a real achievement to have done every workout in the advanced tone and shape spreadsheet. So that means that I've done 6 days a week training and steps achieved for 8 weeks, which is 48 workouts. So it adds up, doesn't it?
Awesome.
It's a long time. And yeah, that's how you see the changes in your body. If you think about it like that, you just think about the hours that you put your body through, and that's where the changes come. Now we've got Lynn Toner. I was just speaking to her before on Facebook. So shout out this week, Lynn. She found that she wanted some greasy, fatty food, but she didn't. So good on her. And she's also, I'll just chuck in an extra thing, which is live and current. She's also asking a little bit about recovery and what's best. And I like that too. So those two things, shout out to Lynn, Lynette. Well done. Good on you, awesome. NSV.
So good. I love that. I love that so much. I've got a similar one to Lynette, and this one is Jennifer Evans. Now, Jennifer, this is a journal post from Jennifer, and she says, week 8 has been hard. I wanted to snack a lot, in capitals, a lot. I've resisted most of these urges, so I'm pretty happy with that, which is awesome. And she says that these last 4 weeks, I'm going to put everything in that I have left to this challenge, which is great. And I think that's a similar one to Lynette, where, you know, those urges are coming in now, where maybe that diet fatigue is starting to settle in, where, you know, some of those foods that we used to love, they used to be part of our normal diet, you know, are giving us that sneaky eye. We're like, ooh, they look pretty today. I want to have one. But we got to resist those urges. So awesome to Lynette and Jennifer, very similar one there. The next one is Robin Sack. And she says that it's been 6 months now that she's been with Maxine's, and my life has changed so much. loving the fitness lifestyle and so comfortable with good nutrition and how to eat well. Hope this is my whole life now. Rocking the year of being 60, feeling strong physically and emotionally. So congratulations to Robin turning 60 this year. And she's been with Maxine for about 6 months now. And she's really committed to the fitness lifestyle. So here's to her and being many more years in the fitness lifestyle.
Good on you, Robin. That's great. That's what we like to hear.
And finally, I've got Karen Nichols. So Karen Nichols, she says that week 8 check-in visually, I can't see much change. My weight is still the same. However, measurements have changed and I have lost centimeters from my arms and thighs. I'm not losing weight. I am losing fat and building muscle. I'm overall happy with my progress. Definitely a lot fitter as well. Yeah, congratulations, Karen. You know, I think this is a really classic NSV, non-scale victory, where she says that, you know, she didn't notice much visual change. She didn't notice her weight changes that much, but she's noticing that she's losing centimeters. She's gaining strength. She's feeling better and she's feeling a lot fitter. So I think a really classic one where, you know, maybe one metric such as the scale isn't telling the whole story, but Karen is feeling great. So congratulations to all of our non-scale victory winners this week. Not winners, but everyone who's been posting about their non-scale victories this week. It's awesome to see.
Very good. Very inspiring. Keep going, everybody. Fantastic. Good NSVs.
Now, the next part here, we've got our coach's corner.
Yeah, coach's corner.
Coach's corner. So, Nick, do you want to take us away? What do you have to say in our coach's corner this week?
Okay, today I would just like to remind everybody about NEAT. So, it's basically the activity that we do when we don't do exercise. It's fidgeting, doing the laundry. It's when we're not setting out to do anything. So as an Italian, I have a lot of NEAT because I'm always fidgeting. I'm a fidgety person. So that counts. Everything counts towards burning calories. But with us, we like to quantify it in some way where we like to actually count our steps as that. And what we need to do is look at it in a way of actually respecting that. So if something's not changing for you and you're finding that possibly you're not doing the steps that we've said to do, or maybe you go to the gym but then you get so wiped out that everybody does this sometimes, you just end up lying down for the rest of the day, that actually doesn't let you burn as many calories as you possibly should be to be in a calorie deficit to see that fat loss. Now, that's not saying that you won't get strong, because if you go into the gym and you lift weights and then just lie down for the rest of the day, good stuff's going to happen, but it's not necessarily going to elicit that fat loss response that we're after. Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just really important to have a look at your NEAT, your non-exercise thermogenic activity, and have a look at what you can actually do to increase that. So we have on our website, we have a flow chart, don't we, that you've done up that talks about, what can you do to burn more calories? What can you do? To elicit fat loss, you can either decrease your food or increase your steps. So that talks you through that. So if you're kind of wondering, if you've stalled and you're kind of wondering and you're not counting what's going on, it's very important to look at the numbers. So if you've got something like a Fitbit or something that counts your steps, it's just very good to make sure that you are actually achieving that exercise during the day. Because I know, like, say for me, I do exercise a lot, but also I can sit down a lot because I'm on my computer a lot with this job. So I've actually got to actively make sure that I get out there and do my steps and things like that if I'm after fat loss.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that there are lots of people who are lazy fit people where they would go to the gym, let's say in the morning. You know, they'll go to the gym for an hour, they do the right things, but then maybe they're sitting down all day for a job. They work in an office all day. Maybe they drive to the office, they sit in their chair all day, they go have lunch, they come back, and then they drive home and they sit on the couch all day. So they're fit, they're active, they're going to the gym, but their overall daily physical activity is quite low. And we call it, NEAT, NEAT, so non exercise activity thermogenesis, or some people call it NEA, so non-exercise activity. And really hard to measure, but probably the best way to measure it would be just our overall step counts, because it just kind of encompasses it all. And we would need to use something like a pedometer or a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, something similar, or a lot of smartphones have like some sort of app you could download. What we find in a dieting process is our step count slowly decreases, where at the start you might be doing 10,000 steps, but if you measured it today in week 9 of the challenge, you might be cruising at like 6,000 steps, because you know you like to be a little bit more lazy, maybe not getting up, doing the things, sitting on the couch, those stuff.
Not having as many calories in, so that makes you want to, your body wants to not move.
Exactly. And I think it does come down to ultimately to a decision, two pathways, right? You can either choose to decrease your food intake further, or decrease your energy intake further, or increase your energy expenditure by increasing your steps. And that's what the flow chart shows you, where it's one or the other. Sometimes it's really obvious which one you're going to do. Like if you're already walking 30,000 steps because you have a really physically active job, okay, well, maybe you need to reduce your food slightly. But if you're having 3,000 calories and you're wondering why you're not losing weight, okay, well, maybe, the other way around. If you're already having 1,200 calories every day, well, maybe we need to increase our total energy expenditure rather than further trying to decrease our food, because we can't just waste away to nothing.
That's right. And it's actually really handy just to up that. If you are sort of, at the 10,000 step mark, your calories are getting pretty low and you're not noticing a change, it's probably good to just increase the steps just by like maybe 1,000 to 2,000, and that's it, touch nothing else. And that's a really good little trick just to get things moving again.
Yeah. And heck, even if you know somebody who wants to start their fitness journey and they're not sure how to start, just by increasing their step count is a great way to start, because they could be consuming literally the exact same diet as what they're having now. Let's say that something really intense like that's 3,000 calories. Like they're having 3,000 calories day in, day out. If they were to continue to have that 3,000 calories, we've got sugar, we've got fat, we've got everything in between, junk food and such, they continue to have that 3,000 calories, but they were to increase their step count progressively so that they're doing maybe 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 steps a day, they will start seeing weight loss.
Yes.
That 100%. Weight loss might not be fat loss. They might be slowly losing muscle mass, bone mineral density, you know, these little bits in between, but they'll start losing weight because they'll be in an energy deficit. Because if you think of that scale, they're keeping their energy intake consistent, but they're increasing their energy expenditure. So they're slowly moving into this energy deficit. So we'll start seeing weight loss with zero change to their diet.
Yeah. And that's, I think, something that sometimes people don't, how are you going to know really? Because we're sold, you know, diets from everywhere, left, right, and center. And we're, sometimes you do just hear about people going, yeah, I just started walking and then I lost all this weight. And it's not even the walking that does that. It's just that balance, the shift in balance. And that's what we've got to understand. And we're in control of that balance. And that's the main thing that I really want you guys to take away from this little discussion today. You are in control. It's like your budget. So you can decide where to budget that energy, how much is going in and how much is coming out.
All right, Nick, I wanted to talk a little bit about the bench press.
Yes.
And I've spoken about this in the past, where the bench press used to be an exercise that I generally had a fear of. I was scared that the bar was going to crush me. And I would often avoid the bench press, and I'll do things like a machine chest press, maybe dumbbell chest press, or even other chest exercises like dips and those chest flies, bits and pieces. But then I fell in love with the bench press. I learned how to do the bench press. I learned how to feel strong and stable in a bench press. And now I don't fail in the bench press, where I know how to manage my load accordingly. If I did end up failing, I know how to, you know, save myself, as in like using maybe like a spring mechanism or something like that through my body, or how to save myself even without a spotter. So the bench press can be done quite safely, of course, if you know how to bench press, and of course, managing your load accordingly. Now, I had a question come up on my Instagram page where someone was asking me about an arch on a bench press. So when we have this arch shape, and I bench press now with an arch, and this person was confused because they had been told in the past that they should be bench pressing with a flat back. And I thought I'd talk about a little bit more about why we would choose to have an arch versus why we would choose not to have an arch, and if there is a better one or the other. Now,
ooh, okay. I'll settle in.
Yeah. So, the first and foremost, the first level here is it does depend on the goal that you're trying to achieve. So for me, my goal is ultimately strength. So I want to lift as much as I can in a bench press. And for that reason, I choose to have an arch in my back. Okay. If we think of really classic architecture shape, architecture, and you think, let's say, go to like Italy, right? Nick, you know, your family heritage, you go to Italy and you see, you see arches everywhere.
Lots of arches.
You've seen arches in architecture for hundreds of years, and these buildings are still upright. Okay. We know that the arch shape is one of the strongest shapes that we have when we're putting pressure down, because that load is transferred across all aspects of that arch. When we compare that to something flat, the flat can get crushed quite easily. So for strength, if you're pushing a heavy load, you're better off to have a nice arch shape so that you are genuinely safer. So it's safer to have an arch in your spine when doing a bench press than not having an arch. Okay, that's number one. Okay. Number two, it increases our stability. So again, for that arch, if there's a uniform arch shape, keyword uniform, we can have a lot more stability. You ain't moving anywhere. If I was to put myself in an arch shape and then I had someone come and try to sit on my chest, that ain't falling. That's not going anywhere. I'm not going to be rocking and shaking all over the place. So I have more stability. And if I was to try to create force, I need a stable surface. You try to push something while you're on a Bosu ball, you have no force. You can't create it. You have no stability. You can't create power. So you need to have some stability that comes with the arch. Additionally, with that arch shape, you can use your legs. So the bench press is actually a full body exercise, okay? So the bench press within a powerlifting competition viewpoint is a full body exercise. We're using our lats as a co-contraction with our pecs. We're using our biceps to slowly eccentrically load the barbell down onto our chest. We're using our quads and our glutes to help drive our body. It's a full body exercise.
That's true. And I've done that before. Yeah, you're right.
And so you're unable to use leg drive if you've got a flat back. Okay. And then finally, with that arch shape, we're able to position our scapula or that shoulder blade in a really nice position where we're trying to pull them together, slightly together and then down. And, this kind of actually goes against shoulder mechanics. So if you were to, let's say, punch something, your shoulder girdle actually moves forwards. Okay. So that's actually more optimal kind of shoulder movement, but the bench press is a strange exercise. It's not actually like a punching motion. It's a bench press. It's not a punch. Okay. Two different things. So we do kind of have to change that slightly, and we're a little bit better when our shoulder blades are down towards our pockets, which is a common cue that we use so that we can create power. Okay.
Why do you think people are so why is the arch so controversial still? Like, why would people even ask? You know, is it because it shortens the range of motion and so people don't think that it, what is it? You explain.
So firstly, I think there are some powerlifters that kind of give it a bad name where they're kind of more contortionists and they move the bar like 2 centimeters. Okay. Taking the piss. All right. So that's one aspect. There are some physical therapists that are definitely in their mind frame of, the arch shape is not good for the spine, which is completely false. It's a great position. You know, if you think about extension patterns in the body, we get most of our extension from our lumbar spine. So we're using our lumbar spine exactly how it's meant to be. Additionally, our shoulder girdle works really well when our thoracic spine is in a neutral, if not extended position. Our shoulder girdle is horrible in a flexed shape. So if we are in a flat back position, we're more likely to flex our thoracic spine and our shoulders kind of moving forward up towards our ears, right? That shoulder elevation position, which isn't really helpful for strength. Okay. Now on the flip side, a flat back position can be beneficial for hypertrophy, okay? And we see this all the time where people would put their feet up on a bench. They would do things like floor presses. They would put themselves in positions so their back stays relatively flat. Now, the reason why is so that they can take away some of the elements that make the movements more stable. By taking those away, they're able to use a lighter load to get a similar stimulus. Okay. So for example, let's say myself, I can bench press, 140, 145 kilos. Okay, great. But you put me in a floor press position, I would struggle to, bench press 100 kilos. So, but then because of that, I'm not using my full body. I'm using just, let's say, my pecs, my front delts, maybe my tricep. I'm not using all the other bits and pieces to help me. So then I can get a similar stimulus on my pecs and using that for maybe a hypertrophy stimulus as opposed to a strength stimulus. So for my goal to try to lift as much as I can, I want to try to get all the little like 1%ers, shortcuts, everything in between so that I can lift as much as I can on a bench press. But if I was to train in a more hypertrophy model, okay, then I'll probably be better off just having a flat neutral back, nothing wild, no crazy arch, anything in between.
Right. I see. I love that. And also, yeah, it does illustrate once again that strength training versus hypertrophy training, two different, completely different things. You can be as strong as a house and still be tiny. Not that you are. So you're both. You're the best of both worlds.
Don't be like that. But look, talking about, you know, chest hypertrophy or pec hypertrophy, like the barbell bench press is actually probably not the best exercise for pure, you know, pec growth or chest growth, because it actually lacks a little bit of shoulder extension. So you can't lower the bar. Even if you had a flat back, a barbell, you can't lower the bar any further because the bar is going to hit your chest. Especially, you know, some of us who have bigger chests, guys and girls, right? Bigger chests, you know, you're not going to get your shoulders in extension. So you kind of miss that kind of like stretch effect on the pec. So you're probably better off doing something like a dumbbell chest press for pec growth, because then you're actually able to take the arm into extension, but then also into horizontal adduction, where you're able to, you know, get your hands closer together, your hands can move. But in a barbell, it's actually a bit of a mid-range motion. So the barbell bench press might not actually be the best exercise for pec hypertrophy, but for overall upper body development, great. Barbell bench press is stock standard in lots of programs. And then for a more competition strength powerlifting side of things, we would prefer to have an arch so that we can have all those extra bits and pieces.
Well, goodness me, you'd better make sure that you include this in the title of the podcast, simply because I know that there are a lot of guys out there that will desperately want to know the secrets to the pec development and things. So make sure you include that, because it's buried in the podcast here and it's a gem.
And well, look, talking about what I said at the start about, let's say, safety, maybe I'll use the word like a spring mechanism. So what happens with the arch is, if you fail, what you can do is actually kind of collapse your arch and then use your body as a bit of like a pulse, right? To pulse the weight off. So if you did fail, that can be a safe mechanism to use. And then what you could do is use that like leg drive. And if you don't have that leg drive on a flat back, then you're more likely to fail. So there is a little bit of like safety elements with something like the arch as well. Okay.
Ah, well, there you go. I liked hearing that. I really did. That's very very interesting, because yeah, I mean, I'm never benching so much that I could probably overhead press it up. I'm not a big bench, not like Di. Everybody, Di can keep a reps.
So Di, she works in our admin team. She's the bench press queen.
Yep.
If you ever sending emails to the challenge email and you're talking to Di, be sure to ask her about her bench press.
You need to, because she just was showing us her technique Tuesday and it was just random repping out 60s. So she's pretty good.
I think we were both baffled at that, where she showed us that. And she was just repping it out and we're like, hold on, what's on the bar?
It looked like it was 20.
Yeah, yeah. So
60, so yeah.
I'm going to have to go do a bench session with Di, I reckon.
I think so. I think that'd be great. I think she's the best. So, yep. Shout out to Di.
All right, Nick, let's move on to some questions for the week this week. So do you want to take away the first one, which was a question that came up, and this person says that, have I ruined everything by having a cheat meal? So have I ruined everything by having a cheat meal? Take away, Nick, what would you say to this person?
Firstly, like the dialogue, the word everything and ruined and other things, they're such extreme words. Like, we've got to really choose our language carefully around this sort of stuff, because everything ruined, I mean, the definition of that would probably be, I guess, to stop forever and never set your foot back in the gym ever in your life. That would probably be, and then even if you stopped at the gym, you could always still restart. So even that's not everything. So like, that's a very dramatic thing. So let's just cut it right back and say, have you ruined your progress in the challenge? Guess what? No. Okay, so the main thing is consistency. So it's what you do over and over and over again that is going to define what happens to you, not one single thing, because none of us are 100% perfect and none of us would be where we are today if we thought that we'd ruined everything by one little thing that we've done that doesn't necessarily fit in to what you think you want to do. I think it's more, personally, I think it's the fear also of then maybe you've had a taste of the other side and it's like, will I allow myself to slip back into that forever? That's the fear, not the whole having done it once. It's like, did I like it so much that I just want to continue doing that? And that's what you've got to really address with yourself. But one singular cheat meal or one day that wasn't on track is not going to ruin it. If you want to then call it something like a diet break, if that's what you want to say. I mean, the thing is, there could be very many different circumstances that have led you to doing this. It could be a friendship thing. You've gone out. You might have had a drink. You might have done that sort of stuff. And that sort of, you can put that into a social basket as well. Sometimes fitness can be a little bit antisocial. You know, if you've got your goals and you want to really hit them, you're not going to be making too many new friends, you know, because it's not that, you're not that much fun. So think about it as putting into the bucket of fun and you know, that kind of thing, life, and then step right back into it. And you know what? You can actually then usually end up channeling those calories into your training, because your training should feel pretty good the next day, you know, and for even a couple of days after, you know, you'll have those extra calories. So if you think about it like that, a lot of people do really in the fitness world, they do think about it like that and they go, this extra fuel is going to go into my muscles and it's going to give me a pump and this and that. And you might not be that connected with it, or you might think that's a little bit silly, but think about it like that. Think about it as fueling that workout and get it done. So it's definitely not the end of the world. It's definitely not going to hurt you. You just want to, what you want to do though, is you don't want to say, and this is the big thing, you don't want to say, okay, so I ate a cake last night and I ate this and I ate that, so then today is also going to be a write-off because I have stuffed up. You just go, did it, got over it. It's like, okay, just say you smashed your car in a car park. You're not going to go and smash the rest of the car and go, okay, that's it, this car's an entire write-off. You're going to say, I won't do that again. You know, it was one little thing, although like it's not really a car crash, but yeah, I'm just saying, like, you don't throw away everything just because you've done one little section. You probably get it fixed and move on.
I agree. I like it. I would just add in that slight increase in energy. So let's say if you did have a diet break and you went back to, let's say, like a maintenance, or heck, even like a slight calorie surplus, what you may find is that you have a little bit more energy, like you said, to have a harder training session in the gym, but you almost might have a little bit more motivation to go and, you know, get some steps in, these types of things. And we find that with a slight increase in energy intake, we also see a slight increase in energy expenditure through that NEAT idea. So if anything, the net outcome might be that you're in this maintenance period and there's no change in your body weight, even if you did have like a cheat meal or a diet break. And, you know, looking into the future, we might have some programs in the 6-week challenge that include something like a diet break. All right. The next question here is that somebody has asked on the forum and says, in the last 4 weeks of the challenge, is there anything I can do to strip as much fat as I can? Extra cardio, drop calories, ? So this person, you know, we're in week 8, they want to get the most out of their challenge experience. They want to try to burn as much fat as they can. I think like all of us, which is totally fine, totally understand. They've basically highlighted the two ideas that we discussed earlier, where we're either trying to increase our energy expenditure, and they're trying to do that by increasing the cardio that they do, or should they drop their calories or reduce their calorie intake? So they're basically trying to play with this scale to try to get into an energy deficit. So the answer technically is that if they're trying to lose more weight, either one of those options is going to be helpful. One might be more obvious than the other. So they might easily be able to reduce their calories by cutting out 100 calories. Great. Or they might be easily able to add an extra 10 minutes of cardio. So it could just literally be a choice, a preference between one or the other. However, the greater our calorie deficit is, the more risks that come along with that. So one risk is that we will have more weight loss, but it's unlikely there's going to be more fat loss because we risk other things like muscle loss. For many of us, we're trying to, you know, target fat loss. We're trying to increase our body composition. And part of that is through that weight loss process. But an increase in our energy deficit can risk more muscle loss, which is what we don't really want. That other things that can happen is what we call metabolic adaptation, where, like we've said, the less energy that you consume or the less readily available energy that you have, the more likely you are going to want to sit on the couch, not go do your steps, have a lazy fit lifestyle, where you're more likely to be like, I'm just going to sit on the couch and watch Netflix rather than go for a hike. So the larger that energy deficit, the more likely our NEAT will decrease as well, so that our energy deficit doesn't end up being that great, because our bodies, humans, we love homeostasis. We don't like a very large discrepancy like this. We like to stay at this equilibrium isocaloric intake. So we can't stay there for too long because our bodies are just going to adapt to it.
Yeah, that's why I think somebody did actually say something on the Facebook group. I just want to keep losing weight forever and ever. And it's not going to happen. And that's why.
Yeah. And then finally, there is an element of fatigue that comes in from having, this energy deficit for so long. It's called diet fatigue, where we get tired, we get over it. We want to have that cookie and have that greasy food, like some of our non-scale victory participants this week had, where the longer we stay in this energy deficit, the higher the risk of us failing the diet, because it just becomes too challenging. Our hunger starts playing a problem. We start looking at foods a certain way. We become like, scavengers. We become like really strange people when we're in this energy deficit for such a long period of time. So
food becomes appealing that would not normally even be appealing. It's a strange thing, sugary things, all sorts of stuff. So that's fine.
What tends to happen is that, if you did have that one cookie, like maybe our cheat meal question a little bit earlier, we kind of go through this process of disinhibition, where you have one and then bang, it's all over. You have all of it, right? Where if you were in just a slight calorie deficit consistently, if you had one cookie, you'd be like, oh, okay, I had one cookie, great, I'm back on board. But if you've been in a large calorie deficit for a long period of time, you have that one cookie, or you want to eat the whole plate and everything in the cupboard, and then grab a pizza and a milkshake and all the things, because that disinhibition reflex is all over it.
Yeah, it's hard to regulate your appetite. It really is. It's really hard to understand that you are full.
So the main takeaway here is that a larger deficit doesn't always lead to better results. It can, if anything, lead to maybe poor results, a large deficit. So this is a little bit of a balancing game. So for this individual, my advice would be that firstly, we want to focus on adherence. So it sounds like, you're on track, you're losing weight, great, happy days. The big one is to just stay on track, is focus on adherence. Because adherence is probably the biggest factor in any sort of diets, is just sticking with it. So for that person, stick with your program. Next, we do want to focus on resistance training. So you've mentioned cardio, but what tends to happen is that we want to still stimulate our muscles, so that our body chooses to maintain our muscle, right? So that if it really was fat loss, we want to maintain as much muscle as we can while we're going through this weight loss phase, so that any weight loss that we have is likely to be fat and not muscle. So that's the big one. Focus on resistance training. And then finally, as Nick, you suggested in your coach's corner, we want to focus on our overall NEAT, or our step count. So it might not be cardio per se, like going in on a treadmill and running, or on a bike, or going outside and going for a swim. These activities can be simply just, going for a walk around the block, something light, something easy, getting your steps up, increasing your overall physical activity can be more powerful than, doing things like extra cardio.
Yes, very true. Very true. Because that can really compromise your time in the gym. You can fatigue yourself for the wrong reasons as well. That's a whole other podcast.
All right, Nick, we've got another question for you. And I paraphrased it slightly. So it was a longer question from the forum. And here we go. So this person says that I've lost weight at the start of the challenge. As the weeks progressed, I've increased my training intensity and gained some strength. I've now gained some of my lost weight back. I've had some small changes in measurements, and I think my legs have toned. To reduce body fat, should I decrease my calories or continue with the plan? So what advice would you give this person?
Okay, I love it. So first of all, they've already answered one of my things in their question. They've already answered saying that they've gained some strength. So the fact that they've done that shows me that they've gained some muscle. So there's some body recomposition going on. And we don't, I guess, unless you're in the challenge and you hear us talking about it, or you know people that are in the fitness space, you don't really hear about recomposition as much, because it's probably not as attractive as weight loss.
But recomposition is actually really where it's at, because that is where you are building muscle, possibly losing some body fat at the same time, completely recomposing your body. So it's going to look completely different. It's going to feel completely different. It's going to have, it's going to be made up of different, more muscle, less fat, ideally. And that is actually not necessarily going to reflect on the scales. So I would be looking at other measurements as well. So strength is going up. Now, this person's saying that their legs look toned. So to see muscle, which is what tone is, it has to be a decrease in body fat, and possibly the muscle has to get a little bit bigger. So that's another good thing. So on my checklist, I'll be like, tick, tick. Now, what's the other thing? So some small changes in measurements. Okay, so that's good. Small changes in measurements. Any changes in measurements are good. I'm assuming that because it's mentioned, I'm thinking that it's a good thing, like the measurements are going down, or possibly they're going up in good places. Because we also, that's the other thing, we want to look for sometimes measurements to go up. So we like to get sort of more width around the shoulders. You know, if you're doing a program where you are trying to actually get a little bit bigger up here to balance your body out, often for women as well, around the hips and glutes, we like to see more if we're trying to recompose our body, because that means that there's growth in those areas, which we actually want for the shape. So very many different metrics that we can look at. It's not just about losing numbers on the scale. In fact, for someone like that, I wouldn't want them to be losing too much on the scale. I want their strength to be going up, and I'd like to keep hearing about the measurements changing. That's my goal for them. So it's going to depend on what their goal is, because they could either maintain this, enjoy the strength, which I think I'm just talking as a woman, I think a lot of women need to spend that time really enjoying things such as strength gains and enjoying the byproduct of what comes with that, rather than worrying too much about getting smaller. Because as I've said a few times, the weight loss is like that kind of thing is the easier bit. This bit here, the building and waiting to see what you're sculpting, that's the bit that I'd like people to sit with a little bit more. So if I was that person's coach, I would probably say it depends on your goals, but I'd probably want to stay in that phase of getting stronger, enjoying the strength for a little bit longer. And then, you could obviously decrease your calories up, you know, as we've just spoken about previously in the whole podcast. You could do those other strategies if you were looking to actually drop weight on the scales. There are a few other things that you could do. But, yeah, I'd probably say you could then get your steps up a little bit more, possibly decrease the calories. But I wouldn't for the strength gains, I'd be – if everything else is changing, I wouldn't want to decrease the calories. I'd probably just up the activity slightly with the steps, keep the calories as they are. They sound good to me. I like it.
I like it. Great response.
Thank you. Oh, I was channeling it. If this was a visual thing, you saw me kind of channeling what this person needed. But yeah, that's just speaking, like, if that's probably one of my favorite clients to coach, is someone who's noticing that their strength is going up and those other metrics are moving, and then we can kind of play around with other stuff. We'd look at recovery, we'd look at sleep, we'd look at what they're doing, nutrient timing even. So yeah, that's my kind of, I love these sorts of clients. Yeah.
I love it.
If this person's listening, I love you. I don't know who you are. I'll have to go back and check the forum.
Yeah. All right, last question here. Another little long one, slightly paraphrased. But it goes, I've been really strict with my eating and training, but I've been getting more fatigued as the challenge progresses and it's starting to affect my training. I've lost 12 kilos so far, which I think is awesome.
I think that's amazing. Wow. Like, they've gone hard. They've gone hard.
And they said that they're not sure if they should back off of the heavy training or increase their calories. They've also said that they've been training for 15 years.
That's huge to get that kind of shift as well after 15 years of training. Yeah.
Well, I think that's awesome to highlight that, you know, some of us can be training for 5, 10, 15 years, and it takes something like a structured program like the challenge that we kind of, you know, give it our all, and we, you know, get these great results, like losing 12 kilos, where this individual, when they post their final photos week 1 to 12, many of us will look at that 12 weeks and go, wow, look at what they did in 12 weeks. But we forget that it's taken 15 years of learning how to train that well to get to that point, to be able to lose 12 kilos in 8 weeks since the recording of this. So I think that's awesome to hear as well. Now, let's talk about fatigue. So this sounds like this person is experiencing some progressive fatigue or tiredness as the challenge progresses. Now, there are lots of things that can cause fatigue. One, obviously, is having too little energy. So if you've been, you know, starving yourself or having a strong calorie deficit or not having enough energy while training, that's going to make you feel tired. So that's the first thing. And that sounds like what they're concerned about. Should I increase my calories? Other things that can cause fatigue are even things like hydration. So not so much how much we drink, but how hydrated we are, especially in our training sessions. So if you train first thing in the morning, you're kind of still dehydrated from the night, but then you could also then go and drink 4 liters of water throughout the day. That's two very different situations. So hydration while you're training can influence your overall training performance. So this person said that their fatigue is influencing their training. So it might be kind of hydration around training. Another thing could be like salt intake around that training session. Sticking with the trend of around our training, even just simply the food that we have around our training, such as our carbohydrate and protein, can play a huge influence on our overall perceived fatigue in that session. So for myself, I prefer to train around this mid-morning time where I might have one, maybe two meals in before I go and train. Many of us sometimes logistically, we can't train. We can't train after having two meals. We need to train first thing in the morning because we've got a full day of everything in between. Okay. So for that individual, you may benefit from having, you know, a couple of pieces of fruit before you train. Even a carb heavy drink like a Gatorade might be helpful for that individual if they're training at such a high intensity that they're just starting to feel fatigued and their training is being influenced by that. And then, of course, the big one here is that the person might just be experiencing training fatigue. They might be training hard for a very long period of time, and their body is just struggling to recover from that. So the fatigue that they're experiencing is just genuine body buildup of fatigue, and they might benefit just from some time off from training. Okay. So my advice for this individual is to not increase their calories yet. It sounds like their goal is to continue to see weight loss. They've lost 12 kilos so far. So I wouldn't recommend that they increase their calories. What I would recommend that they do, not so much back off from heavy training, because that has strong language involved with that. What this person likely needs is something like a deload. They've been training for 15 years. They're probably in this advanced category of training. They'd probably benefit from something like a deload. Now, Nick, I know you do deloads. I do deloads all the time. They're not a scary thing. They're not a bad thing. It's part of well-structured and smart training.
Yeah, you have to do them, really.
You have to. So for me, when I go through a deload, I cut my volume, my total training volume, by about 30%, so a third, and sometimes even up to a half. So what that means is that instead of doing 10 sets of squats, I might do 5 sets of squats for the whole week. Or maybe I would adjust the load. So I can either adjust the total amount of volume that I do, so the total amount of sets, or I might adjust the load where instead of squatting 200 kilos, I might squat 150 kilos or maybe 100 kilos or something similar. So I'm just still going through the motions, still training, still going to the gym, but I'm training at a slightly lower volume so that I can continue to rest and recover so that I can go back into training. So that could just be maybe the weekend of slightly lower training or up to a whole week of slightly lower training. Now, this is built into some of our programs. So you'll find that weeks 1, week 5, and week 9 is slightly lower in volume compared to the rest of our programs, especially in these advanced programs. So that kind of has a little bit of a built-in deload or a bit of a sensitization week where if you were following those programs to the set prescription, you kind of go through this wave where you have a week of slightly lower volumes that you can recover, you can grow. And then when you go back and increase your volume progressively, you can hit it harder, right? That's the overall goal where, you know, we can't always go at 100% all the time because we're slowly going to get fatigued. And you may find that your perceived 100% is only maybe your 50% of total actual output, right? And if you took a week off of slightly lighter training, went back to training, your perceived 100% would be closer to 100% of your actual performance potential. So then you're able to bench press the 150 kilos, you're able to deadlift the 300 kilos, you're able to, you know, do all the things, train much harder. And that's smart programming, especially for that advanced individual, which sounds like this person is.
Sounds perfect. Good advice. I think lots of us could take that on board as well, you know.
Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for this week. This week's episode number 26 of the Challenge Weekly Show.
26.
If you've enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can tag us on Instagram or Facebook. If you have any questions for us, you can reach out to us on that Facebook or Instagram, or even on the Challenge forums where we get a lot of these questions and content. And be sure to check out our other 25 episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.